Chapter 10. There are three acts to the fighting of each bull, and they are called in Spanish Los Tres Tercios de la Lidia, or the three-thirds of the combat. The first act, where the bull charges the picadors, is the Suerte de Varas, or the trial of the lances. Suerte is an important word in Spanish. It means, according to the dictionary, suerte, feminine, chance, hazard, lots, fortune, luck, good luck, haphazard, state, condition, fate, doom, destiny, kind, sort, species, manner, mode, way, skillful maneuver, trick, feat, juggle, and piece of ground separated by landmark. So the translation of trial or maneuver is quite arbitrary, as any translation must be from the Spanish. The action of the picadors in the ring and the work of the matadors who are charged with protecting them with their capes when they are dismounted make up the first act of the bullfight. When the president signals for the end of this act and the bugle blows, the picadors leave the ring and the second act begins. There are no horses in the ring after the first act except the dead horses, which are covered with canvas. Act 1 is the act of the capes, the picks, and the horses. In it, the bull has the greatest opportunity to display his bravery or cowardice. Act 2 is that of the banderillas. These are pairs of sticks about a yard long, 70 centimeters to be exact, with a harpoon-shaped steel point 4 centimeters long at one end. They are supposed to be placed two at a time in the humped muscle at the top of the bull's neck as he charges the man who holds them. They are designed to complete the work of slowing up the bull and regulating the carriage of his head, which has been begun by the picadors, so that his attack will be slower but surer and better directed. 4 pair of banderillas are usually put in. If they are placed by the banderilleros, or peones, they must be placed above all other considerations quickly and in the proper position. If the matador himself places them, he may indulge in a preparation which is usually accompanied by music. This is the most picturesque part of the bullfight, and the part most spectators care for the most when first seeing fights. The mission of the banderilleros is not only to force the bull by hooking to tire his neck muscles and carry his head lower, but also by placing them at one side or another to correct a tendency to hook to that side. The entire act of the banderillas should not take more than 5 minutes. If it is prolonged, the bull becomes discomposed and the fight loses the tempo it must keep. And if the bull is an uncertain and dangerous one, he has too many opportunities to see and charge men unarmed with any lure, and so develops a tendency to search for the man, the bundle as the Spanish call him, behind the cloth when the matador comes out for the last act with the sword and muleta. The president changes the act after 3 or at most 4 pairs of banderillas have been placed, and the third and final division is the death. It is made up of 3 parts. First, the brindis, or salutation of the president, and dedication or toasting of the death of the bull, either to him or to some other person by the matador, followed by the work of the matador with the muleta. This is a scarlet serge cloth which is folded over a stick which has a sharp spike on one end and a handle at the other. The spike goes through the cloth, which is fastened to the other end of the handle with a thumb screw so that it hangs in folds along the length of the stick. Muleta means literally crutch, but in bullfighting it refers to the scarlet serge-draped stick with which the matador is supposed to master the bull, prepare him for killing, and finally hold in his left hand to lower the bull's head and keep it lowered while he kills the animal by a sword thrust high up between his shoulder blades. There are 3 acts in the tragedy of the bullfight, and it is the first one, the horse part, which indicates what the others will be, and in fact makes the rest possible. It is in the first act that the bull comes out in full possession of all his faculties, confident, fast, vicious, and conquering. All his victories are in the first act. At the end of the first act, he is apparently won. He has cleared the ring of mounted men and is alone. In the second act, He is baffled completely by an unarmed man and very cruelly punished by the banderillas, so that his confidence and his blind general rage goes, and he concentrates his hatred on an individual object. In the third act, he is faced by only one man who must, alone, dominate him by a piece of cloth placed over a stick and kill him from in front, going in over the bull's right horn to kill him with a sword thrust between the arch of his shoulder blades. When I first saw bullfights, the only part that I did not like was the banderillas. They seemed to make such a great and cruel change in the bull. He became an altogether different animal when the banderillas were in, and I resented the loss of the free, wild quality he brought with him into the ring. That quality that reaches its greatest expression when he faces the picadors. When the banderillas are in, he's done for. They are the sentencing. The first act is the trial, the second act is the sentencing, and the third, the execution. But afterwards, when I learned how much more dangerous the bull becomes as he goes on the defensive, how, after the banderillas have sobered him and his speed of foot has been cut, he aims every horn stroke as a hunter aims at an individual bird in a covey rather than shooting at them all and missing. And finally, when I learned the things that can be done with him as an artistic property, when he is properly slowed and still has kept his bravery and his strength, I kept my admiration for him always, but felt no more sympathy for him than for a canvas, or the marble a sculpture cuts, or the dry powder snow your skis cut through. I know no modern sculpture, except Brancusi's, that is in any way the equal of the sculpture of modern bullfighting. But it is an impermanent art, as singing and the dance are, one of those that Leonardo advised men to avoid, and when the performer is gone, the art exists only in the memory of those who have seen it, and dies with them. Looking at photographs, reading descriptions, or trying to recall it too often can only kill it in the memory of an individual. If it were permanent, it could be one of the major arts, but it is not, and so it finishes with whoever makes it, while a major art cannot even be judged until the unimportant physical rottenness of whoever made it is well buried. It is an art that deals with death, and death wipes it out. But it is never truly lost, you say, because in all arts, all improvements and discoveries that are logical are carried on by someone else, so nothing is lost really, except the man himself. Yes, and it would be very comforting to know that if at his death all the painter's canvases disappeared with him, that Cézanne's discoveries, for example, were not lost, but would be used by all his imitators. Like hell it would. Suppose a painter's canvases disappeared with him, and a writer's books were automatically destroyed at his death, and only existed in the memory of those that had read them. That is what happens in bullfighting. The art, the method, the improvements of doing, the discoveries remain, but the individual whose doing of them made them, who was the touchstone, the original, disappears. And until another individual as great comes, the things, by being imitated with the original gone, soon distort, lengthen, shorten, weaken, and lose all reference to the original. All art is only done by the individual. The individual is all you ever have, and all schools only serve to classify their members as failures. The individual, the great artist when he comes, uses everything that has been discovered or known about his art up to that point, being able to accept or reject in a time so short it seems that the knowledge was born with him, rather than that he takes instantly what it takes the ordinary man a lifetime to know, and then the great artist goes beyond what has been done or known and makes something of his own. But there is sometimes a long time between great ones, and those that have known the former great ones rarely recognize the new ones when they come. They want the old, the way it was that they remember it. But the others, the contemporaries, recognize the new great ones because of their ability to know so quickly. And finally, even the ones who remember the old do. They are excused from not recognizing at once because they, in the period of waiting, see so many false ones that they become so cautious that they cannot trust their feelings. Only their memory. Memory, of course, is never true. After you get a great bullfighter, you may lose him most easily from disease, much more easily than by death. Of the only two really great ones since Belmonte retired, neither ever made a full career. Tuberculosis took one, and syphilis ruined the other. They are the two occupational diseases of the matador. He starts the corrida in the hot sun, in a sun that is often so hot that people with little money will gladly pay three times as much for their ticket to be able to sit in the shade. He wears a heavy gold brocaded jacket that makes him sweat in the sun as a boxer sweats skipping rope in training. From this heat, in this perspiration, with no chance for a shower or an alcohol rub to close the pores, the matador, as the sun goes down and the shadow of the amphitheater falls on the sand, stands, comparatively inactive but in readiness to aid, while his companions kill their last bulls. Often at the end of summer and in the early fall in the high plateaus of Spain, it is cold enough for you to need an overcoat at the end of a bullfight in a town where it was so hot in the sun at the beginning of the fight that you were liable to sunstroke if you were bareheaded. Spain is a mountain country, and a good part of it is African, and in the fall and end of summer, when the sun is gone, the cold comes quickly and deadly for anyone who must stand in it, wet with sweat, unable even to wipe himself dry. A boxer takes every precaution to avoid catching cold when he is in a sweat, and a bullfighter can take none. That would be enough to account for the number who get tuberculosis even without the fatigue of the nightly journeying and dust and daily fighting during the feria season of August and September. Syphilis is another thing. Boxers, bullfighters, and soldiers contract syphilis for the same reasons that make them choose those professions. In boxing, most sudden reversals of form, the majority of cases of what is called punch drunkenness, of walking on the heels, are products of syphilis. You cannot name the individuals in a book because it is libelous, but anyone in the profession will tell you of a dozen recent cases. There are always recent cases. Syphilis was the disease of the Crusaders in the Middle Ages. It was supposed to be brought to Europe by them, and it is a disease of all people who lead lives in which a disregard of consequences dominates. It is an industrial accident to be expected by all those who lead irregular sexual lives, and from their habits of mind would rather take chances than use prophylactics. And it is a to-be-expected end, or rather phase, of the life of all fornicators who continue their careers far enough. A few years ago, I had the opportunity of observing the rake's progress of some citizens who, in college, were great moral influences, but after coming out into the world discovered the joys of immorality, which, as believers in Yale and China, they never had indulged in as young men, and delivering themselves to these joys seemed to believe that they had discovered, if not indeed invented, sexual intercourse. They believed this was this great new thing that they had just discovered, and were most joyously promiscuous until their first experience with disease, which they then believed they too had discovered and invented. Surely one could never have known of this dreadful thing, nor could have experienced it, or it would not have been allowed to exist, and they become again for a time preachers and practicers of the greatest purity of life, or at least limited their activities to a narrower social circle. There has been much change in fashion and morals, and many who were formerly destined for teachers in fashionable Sunday school classes are now our most prominent rounders. Like the bullfighters who are ruined by their first goring, they have really no vocation as rounders. But it is a trial to watch or to hear them during their discovery of what Guy de Maupassant classed among the diseases of adolescence, and of what, incidentally, to justify his right, so to speak, he died of. They say, he jests at scars who never felt a wound. But he jests very well at scars who is covered with them, or at least men once did, although now our jesters will be most humorous about anything which happens to anyone else, and the moment they are touched by anything themselves cry out, but you don't understand, this is really serious, and become great moralists or abandon the whole thing through something as banal as suicide. Probably venereal diseases must exist, as bulls must have horns in order to keep all things in their proper relation, or the number of Casanovas and of matadors would be so great there would be practically no one else. But I would give much to have it eliminated in Spain because of what it can do to a great matador. Though even if we did without it in Spain, it could be acquired in other places, or men would go upon a crusade and bring it back from somewhere. You cannot expect a matador who is triumphed in the afternoon by taking chances not to take them in the night, and más cornadas dan las mujeres. Three things keep boys from promiscuous intercourse: religious belief, timidity, and fear of venereal diseases. The last is most commonly the basis of appeal made by the YMCA and other institutions for clean living. Against these influences in a bullfighter is the tradition which demands that a torero have many affairs, his inclinations, the fact that there will always be women after him, some for himself, some for his money, and plenty for both, and his contempt for venereal diseases as danger. "But," says the old lady, "do many bullfighters contract these diseases?" "Madam, they contract them as all men do who go with women thinking only of the woman and not of their future health." Old lady: "But why do they not take thought for their health?" "Madam, it is difficult. Truly, it is not a thought that comes into the head of a man if he is well pleased. Even though a woman be a whore, yet if she be a good whore, a man thinks well of her at the time, and sometimes after." Old lady: "And are these illnesses then all from commercial women?" "No, madam. They come often from friends, or the friends of friends, or from anyone you may bed with here, there, or indeed anywhere." Old lady: "It must be most dangerous then to be a man."
"It is indeed, madam, and but few survive it. 'Tis a hard trade, and the grave is at the end of it."
Old lady: "Would it not be better if these men all married and bedded only with their wives?"
"For their souls' good, yes, and for their bodies too, but as bullfighters, many are ruined if they marry, if they love their wives truly."
Old lady: "And their wives, what of them?"
"Of their wives, who can speak who has not been one? If the husband has no contracts, he does not make a living. But at each contract, he risks death, and no man can go into the ring and say that he will come out alive. It is not like being a wife to a soldier, for your soldier earns his living when there is no war, nor your sailor, for he is long gone, but his ship is his protection, nor your boxer, for he does not face death. It is like being wife to no other man, and I would not wish it for her if I had a daughter."
Old lady: "Have you a daughter, sir?"
"No, madam."
Old lady: "Then at least we need not worry for her. But I wish that the bullfighters did not get these illnesses."
"Ah, madam, you will find no man who is a man who will not bear some marks of past misfortune. Either he has been hit here, or broken this, or contracted that. But a man throws off many things, and I know a champion at golf who never putted so well as with the gonorrhea."
Old lady: "Have you no remedy, then?"
"Madam, there is no remedy for anything in life. Death is a sovereign remedy for all misfortunes, and we'd do best to leave off all discoursing now and get to table. Within our time, the scientist may well abolish these old diseases, and we'll live to see the end of all morality. But meantime, I would rather dine on suckling pig at Botin's than sit and think of casualties my friends have suffered."
Old lady: "Then let us dine. Tomorrow you can tell us more about the bullfights."